Take your Bibles with me this morning and turn to Mark chapter 3. We'll look in there in just a moment. Time is something that we all care about. We want to know what time it is. We have a watch or we look at our phone all the time and what time it is. If someone asks us to do something, one of the first questions we ask is, how much time is it going to take? And if we don't want to do something when we're asked, our greatest excuse is, well, I don't really have the time to do that. When it comes to training people for ministry, when it comes to engaging others to do ministry, the most valuable thing that we can offer is our time. And when I look at this idea of training, I don't always think about the idea of programs or things like that. I look at it as an intentional investment into the life of someone else. This benefits them, and it benefits our church as a whole. And as we go through this sermon today, you're going to hear me use that word investment a lot. We need to be believers who invest in each other. Yesterday, we had a fantastic day of upward basketball in here, and I get the opportunity to coach a sixth grade team and to co-coach a fourth grade team, and I absolutely love coaching those kids, and I like to see when they come into the program where they are, and by the end of the season, to see how much they have grown and how much they have learned. The goal in Upward is to get them to grow in as basketball players and to introduce them to Jesus, and as painfully as this is for me to say, it's not always about winning, right? And as competitive as I am, you know, that's hard for me to say, but it's really not, because at the end of an Upward season, they don't get a bonus check for winning. They don't get a big trophy to take home or anything like that. But it's this investment in these kids to get them from here to here. And one of the greatest joys is to watch them to grow. And this is what we should do in our life, in our church. This should be part of our ministry, is that we help people to grow. This is part of discipleship, this idea of coaching and mentoring. And I'm thankful that there were people in my life that mentored me, that took the time to spend with me. Most of the time, I didn't even know that I was being mentored. I just figured there were some people that were hanging out with me, and it was a cool thing to do, and I liked that they were doing it, but they were intentional in their life, intentional being there for me, and they cared about me. And we're going to look at a verse today, one simple verse, and we're going to see a great example from Jesus about him investing himself into the lives of others. And so if you want to read with me in Mark chapter 3, we're going to look at verse 14. And it says in this verse that he appointed 12 so they would be with him and that he could send them out to preach. I'll read that again. And he appointed 12 so that they would be with him and that he could send them out to preach. I believe with all of my heart that every believer should be on mission with God. And the most important thing in our Christian life that we need to realize is that we are called by God to be with him, and we are called by God to be with him for a purpose. In verse 13, it tells us that Jesus summoned those that he wanted, and they came to him. And it says in this passage in verse 14 that they were with him, and he had a purpose for them. He appointed them. And Jesus is calling us today. First of all, he calls us into a relationship with him. He wants us to walk with him. He wants us to be with him. And he wants us to not just to be with him, but Jesus wants us to be on ministry with him. And as a church, we need to challenge people with these truths. We need to challenge people with the message of salvation. And we need to challenge those that have salvation to find purpose in their relationship with God, whatever that may look like. And this takes effort on our part. It takes effort on my part. It takes effort on the part of the leadership of the church, and it takes effort on the part of every member of this church. There needs to be an investment to each other. We need to invest in each other's lives. One of my greatest frustrations as your pastor is that I see you come here every single week, and I want to spend time with you and to minister to each and every one of you, and I can't. I can't do it. I would love to take every single one of you out to lunch at some point and grab me sometime. We'll try to do lunch. But no matter how many weeks that takes, I'm going to miss somebody. And sometimes I'll sit there and I'll think, man, I really should have caught so-and-so. What I should have talked to so-and-so. And it's one of my greatest frustrations in doing ministries that I can't do that. But this is why that it's not all about me. If it was all on me to do all the ministry of the church, there'd be so many things that wouldn't be done and so many people that would be missed. This is why we have deacons, and this is why we have Sunday school teachers, and this is why we have V groups with leaders, and this is why we have ministry teams with ministry team leaders. Every leader should invest in those who come to our church to help them discover purpose. Purpose with Jesus is something we do together. In this passage, it says Jesus chose 12 men to spend most of his time with. He saw something in these individuals, and he wanted to invest in them. They were worth his time. And sometimes I wonder if we think that we're worth time. Maybe sometimes we look and say, you know, am I really worth the time? And I said, I'm thankful for those men and women in my life that thought that I was worth the time. And Jesus looked and he said, these men are worth an investment. There were hundreds of people that followed Jesus at some point. There were probably some other really good individuals. But Jesus said, look, these 12 are the ones that I'm going to invest in. Why? Because he wanted to help them develop skills and attitudes needed to do ministry. He wanted to see them grow into ministry and buy into the ministry, to spend that time with them. See, the best leaders in a church are those that are impacted by the church, those that see value in what the church does. We had to talk about this the time that you called me as a pastor 3 years ago. Our staff was talking, and we realized that the last person that we called as staff in our church that didn't have some kind of a connection already to our church that was an unknown quantity was me 20-some years ago. Everybody else that's on our staff and our church had some connection to the church before they came on staff. They grew as part of the ministries of here, and they grew spiritually here. And then they have investment, and they love, and they care, and we need to see people grow in that way. See, Jesus understood that those that grow into ministry are going to buy into it. And the future of the ministry is dependent on those involved. And a spiritual development relates to the time that we put into their lives. And do we see Jesus in this? We see Jesus doing this with these people. As we read the Gospels, what did Jesus do? He spent time helping the disciples develop their skills. He taught them and he corrected them. He let them ask questions. And sometimes they asked really dumb questions. And Jesus still spent time with them. He listened to those questions. He let them fail. As they spent time with Jesus, they caught his mission. They caught his vision, and they gave themselves to the cause of Jesus. And then God used them in tremendous ways. God used them in the book of Acts as they start the early church. These 12 were God's chosen instruments, and they grew and spent time with him. And you and me, as part of this church, we are placed here for a purpose, to carry out the mission that God has for us. If you are a leader in this church, then who are you intentionally investing in? If you're a member of this church, are you finding your place to grow here? And this is not an easy thing to do. This is so easy to say, it's not easy to do. Investing in others is hard. Finding people to minister with you is hard. Getting involved is hard. We see this thing all the time in a church. I hear the complaint that I want to serve, but I have no place to serve. And then I hear people say, well, there are so few of us doing all the ministry and nobody else is doing anything. And we see this disconnect. Because obviously there are people who want to serve, and obviously there's a need, and we're missing some things, and we have this disconnect, and we have to get involved. And maybe the getting involved part is easy for those that are extroverted. You introverts, you strange people that I totally do not understand. Maybe you struggle a little bit more. And you're waiting for somebody to come to you, or maybe it's a little scary to get involved because you're introverted and really you don't like people very much, which again I don't understand. But then you have others that are so extroverted, and whatever it is, we've got to find ways to make those connections. And we need to find ways to develop real relationships in our church, and relationships are difficult. Right? If we put ourselves out there investing, it costs us something. It costs us. Sometimes it can add work to our lives. Sometimes investing in someone else can cause you stress. Sometimes even heartache. Several years ago, I was visiting with my daughter, and she was off to college, and she was talking about this fear of investing in herself and the fear of putting herself out there because she didn't want to get hurt. And we were talking, and I asked her the question. I said, "Elizabeth, have you ever seen your mom and I get hurt doing church ministry?" And she says, "Yes, Dad, I have. I've seen it a lot." I said, "You're right." I said, "But let me ask you another question. How many people do you know that have gone through our ministries that call us mom and dad? Or that bring their kids by to come see us? Or that we have kept in contact with for years and have great relationships and friendships with?" And she says, "Man, Dad, a whole lot." And I said, "Which is more?" She says, "Way more people, good relationships, than those that hurt you." And I said, "Elizabeth, you can't have one without the other. If you're not willing to put yourself out there, you will never have the opportunity to have those kinds of relationships. And sometimes if we choose to invest ourselves in people, they'll leave, and that's a heartache. But we have to be willing to say that that's okay. Sometimes we'll invest in people, and they will hurt us, and we have to be willing to say that's okay. Because if we're not willing to invest in people, and if we're not willing to train people as a church and help them to grow, then we're never going to multiply ministry. And if we don't multiply ministry and the people involved in ministry, you know what happens? That means that eventually things die. Eventually the church will not function. The church will begin to die because people are not doing ministry because they have not been trained and given opportunities to do that. This means that we have to invite people to join us in ministry. Understanding that when we do that, it's not about who we are, it's about who He is. In this passage, Jesus says that He appointed 12 so they would be with Him. Be with Him. Jesus invited these men to be a part of His life. By living with them, He demonstrated how to live life before He ever taught them how to teach. He before He taught them to go in pairs and go share the gospel, before He taught them how to do any of these things, He invited them to do life with Him. And we need to do the same. Our impact is directly proportionate to our personal involvement with people. See, I think many of us, many believers, we're far too removed to do real ministry. Sometimes I think maybe we're far too removed in our own walk with the Lord. That we have issues in our own walk with God, and we can't invest in others if we're not walking with God ourselves. I think that as Christians, maybe some of us, we're too far removed from a lost world to be able to really minister to the world. And my fear is, even in a congregation, a church as strong as ours is, I wonder if maybe we're too far removed from each other to really invest in each other. Look, it has to be more than just coming and spending a couple hours a week together. We have to get to know each other and to care about each other and to love each other. See, you and I, we're appointed as and called as a follower of Christ to be with Christ first and foremost. And if we're appointed to do that, if we're appointed to be with God, if we're called by Jesus to be with Jesus, if we're called to spend time with Jesus, if we're called to hear His Word and meditate on His Word and come to Him in prayer and to be with Him, then this has to be manifested in our relationships with others. See, Jesus had a plan of how He was going to train those for ministry. And the plan was He invited them into His life. And if you watch Jesus, He was in constant communication with the Father. He walked with the Father and He invested in others. And while they were together, He taught them. While they did life together, He taught them. Both as groups and individually, He gave them tools and resources they needed to succeed. And too often, when we think about training in church circles, we think about some class or some seminar. But I want you to think about this and notice when people go to a class, what happens when the class is over? They leave. You have an hour class. I'm gonna do this class on training. How long is it gonna be? An hour. Perfect. You set your timer. 1 hour. Class is over. I'm off to the next thing. But what happens when you invite people into your home and you have dinner with them and you spend time together and they never leave? They just stay, right? Hours go by and you're like, "Dude, I want to go to bed," and you're still here, right? You spend time together. I remember doing college ministry, and there were times I would tell my students, "Dude, lock the door on your way out. I'm going to bed," right? But it's true. That spending time together, the Lord Jesus, he lived with his disciples in a variety of settings and situations. And friends, we need to do this. We need to do this in our church and in our home, our school, work, play. We need to let people see how we do life. Jesus let his disciples see him when he was discouraged and when he was angry and when he was under stress and when he was tired and he was hungry. They saw Jesus handle situations and all these things. And Jesus was an example to them. And this can be done by each and every one of us in our worship service today. Each of us can invest in someone. Those who are maturing in ministry, find someone to bring alongside you. Teachers, who are we training? Leaders, who are we investing in? Deacons, who are we teaching to serve? You, children's workers, who are we training to do our ministry? There are so many that have a desire to serve, and who are we connecting with? What are we doing to show people and invite them in? Are we willing to learn and teachable? Maybe you, what are you doing to connect in ways to find people to invest in you? This has to be intentional on both sides. You know, I'm thankful for the many people that invested in me this way. And I can think of some of them. I think about my college minister, Roger Bear, who just invited me to do life with him. That he just saw something in me, and Roger and I connected, and he just spent time with me, and I said I had no idea at that time he was mentoring me. He just did life with me. I think about Don Broker, who was a pastor of a church that I didn't even go to in college. He was a pastor of a different church, and he saw something in me, and he came to me in my apartment, and he said, Ed, I really feel God calling you to do ministry. I feel like God's calling you to preach. If you ever want to preach in my church on a Sunday night, anytime you want to, the pulpit's yours. And he gave me those opportunities on Sunday nights, and it's in a church I didn't even go to. And the only thing I had to do was I had to come to his office on Monday mornings after I preached and evaluate the sermon. I'm thankful for people like Don. I'm thankful for people like Carmen, who was an interim pastor in a church I was at, who invited me. He was a hospital chaplain, and he said, Ed, on Sunday afternoons, come do hospital visits with me, and allowed me the chance to get to know that. I'm thankful for my college pastor, Albert, who let me see the inner workings of a church. I'm thankful for 20-some years that I could serve with Quinn Williams here at this church and taught me more things than I can list, everything from quartering antelope and elk to things of ministry. I learned so much from him. I'm thankful for men like Fred Creason, who invested in my education and somehow twisted that to a place where now I'm teaching. I'm in seminary classes. I'm thankful for people like that. See, if we expect to train believers for ministry by having the right programs, we're going to wait a really, really long time with no success. If we want to just offer classes and expect that people are going to come, we're going to wait a really, really long time. But if we're willing to see what we can offer to others, if we're willing to invest in others, we will see ministry multiplied. And Jesus didn't just tell them what to do. He showed them how to do it. Right? He took them alongside with him. When I was in college, I went on a mission trip to Chicago, and it was actually the mission trip I met my wife on. We met on this mission trip, got to know each other. And we were at Chicago State University, and we were passing out these flyers, inviting people to come to this BCM lunch ministry thing we were doing. And the students were really nervous about doing this because a lot of them are introverts, which again, I don't understand. And I was extremely extroverted, and I said, hey, look, this is easy. All you got to do is walk up to somebody and talk to them. And so I took a BCM flyer for lunch. And I walked up to this guy and I handed it to him and I said, hey, you should come join us for lunch for the CM ministry. And he took his lighter and he lit my pamphlet on fire and cussed me out and told me no uncertain terms where I could put my Jesus. And I looked at the students that I was with and I said, see, isn't that easy? No problem at all. See, when Jesus walked with his disciples, when Jesus spent time with them, Jesus taught them to be real. To be real, a great lesson in life. Let people see the good and the bad of ministry. Jesus did not, he didn't shield the disciples when things were tough. He didn't shield them when the Pharisees were giving Jesus a hard time. He let them see these things. You see, it's a disservice to let people see that the ministry is always easy because it's not. walking through people in the hard times. Let them see the hard times in ministry. Let them be alongside you and see what you're doing and why you're doing and how you handle things. Let them see the value in what you're doing and allow them to see how you handle these situations and share with people a kingdom perspective. Because this whole thing we're talking about is about not doing things our way. It's not about who we are, but it's about pointing people to Jesus and doing things God's way. It says in this last part of this passage here that he appointed 12, they could be with him, they could send them out to preach. We need to give people opportunities and places to serve. Jesus sent them out. They started by working under his guidance, by working with him. He provided a safe place for them and a place where they could fail. And this should be the heart of our church, is to give people ministry and opportunities in safe places where if they fail, it's okay. You know, how do we expect to train young preachers if we don't give them the opportunity to preach? And I'm thankful that we have seen that here in our church. We have seen several individuals sharing their first sermons, and we need to be able to do that. How do we expect to have new teachers if they aren't given the opportunity to teach? And we want people to teach, and we complain because there's not enough teachers. But then we say we want people to have experience teaching, and if they have experience, they can teach. But since they don't have experience, we're not going to let them teach, but we're going to complain because they don't have teachers. You see where we're going here. We have to give people these opportunities to teach. And this is true in every aspect of ministry. So we've come to the place in the American church culture where we want everything to be perfect. We want to listen to perfect sermons and have perfect music, and we want perfect Sunday school classes, and we want perfect Bible studies. And if we can't get it, we'll just listen to a podcast that is perfect, and then we're going to compare our church to this perfect podcast that we watch or listen to. And the reason it's perfect, because you don't have to deal with any people there. You just have to watch and listen. And we do this in our church, and if things aren't perfect, then we complain. Right? And it's not about us. There are things in church that we don't like. In the first service, I said this, and I'll say it again. Scott, I don't like every song that you sing on Sunday mornings. We can talk later about the ones we shouldn't do anymore. I'm kidding. It's not about me. Right? It's not about me. We can find things to complain about. We can find things to not like. And as long as this is our attitude, as long as complaining, as long as we don't build leaders, as long as we do that, as long as we don't train people and empower them for ministry, then we are going to be a church that's going to struggle. We're going to struggle. Have you ever been in a place where you go to find a job and they tell you, man, I really like you, but you don't have enough experience? You ever been there? We have that in church. We have that in church. We got to give those people those experiences and opportunities to gain experiences. And then we can offer feedback without rejection. And I think about Don Broeker offering that feedback. My first sermon that I ever preached, man, it was horrible. It was bad. Hopefully I've gotten a little bit better since then, a little bit. I have all my sermons, like almost every sermon I ever preached, on hard copy someplace. Some of them are handwritten. And I was going through some of those here over Christmas, just getting kind of tidying some things up. And I was reading one of those, and I'm like, man, I really said that? That's stupid. Why did I ever preach that? But I'm thankful that there were people that came alongside and helped me to grow. Evaluation is so important to training leaders. We need to spend time doing it and learn from our mistakes and honest feedback. Jesus used these men. He used who they were. He used their personalities. And you see that come out in their writings. He used their struggles and their successes. And we see that come out in Scripture. These men were used not because they were perfect individuals, but because they were willing. And I honestly believe that we are a church full of people that can do more than we think we can. We have people that have passions and abilities that can make our church stronger. We have people that just need to use those, to be on purpose with God and use those. And we need to be a church that tries new things and gives people opportunities to lead in ways that look different. Understand this might mean that things don't always look the way we want them to. That it might be different if we did them ourselves. For several years, I did a lot of our outreach stuff in our church, and a few years ago, we turned outreach over to an outreach person. And the first time we did an Easter egg hunt, I'm riding with my daughter, Abby, and she says, Ed, does it bother you that when people do the things you do, they do them wrong? And I said, Abby, what do you mean wrong? And she says, well, I don't really mean wrong. I just mean different. does it bother you to do things different? And I said, you know, Abby, it doesn't really bother me they do things different. And sometimes, they do it wrong, but it's okay if they do it wrong. Right? It's okay if it looks different. I promise you that the early church would have looked a whole lot different if Jesus would have stuck around and did it. If Jesus wouldn't have ascended into heaven, and he says, okay, I'm not really going to let disciples do this. I'm not sure. I trust them, and so I'm going to go ahead and do this church thing and kept them in the background, it would have looked a whole lot different. All the mistakes the disciples would have made wouldn't have happened, but then the lessons wouldn't have happened either, and they would have not have grown into the men that God had called them to be. In my ministry, there are many things that we have tried that I thought were dumb. And I thought they would never work, and some of those things we're still doing. There are times in staff meeting that our staff will come up with something, and I'll be sitting there inside my head, shaking my head, going, really? That's what you want to do? And it turned out to be fantastic, great things to give people opportunities. Again, things we're still doing in ministry years later because people had ideas that even though I thought they weren't good, they were. And I'm so glad I get an opportunity to do that. I have a saying that we will do anything in our church if it's not illegal, immoral, or cost too much. All right, we will try anything in our church. And for Boyd Avenue, there are some important things that we need to consider as we train people for ministry and as we give people this opportunity to serve. Hey, we need to stay positive. We need to stay positive. Even when times are struggling, and there will be times in church, in the church life, there are times of ups and downs. And even in times of struggling, stay positive. Even in discussing negative situations, be positive. I think about coaching my sixth graders. And as I'm coaching these sixth graders, and yesterday was chaos. It's like they forgot everything I taught them when they walked onto the basketball court. And I have a choice. I could say, you bunch of idiots, what are you doing? Don't you know anything? Right? Or I could, applaud the things they did and raise them up, right? Be positive. Be encouraging. We need to be a church that is encouraging. Stay positive. Challenge the way that we think. We can't keep doing ministry the same way. The world is changing. The message never changes. But we have to find new ways to engage our world. We have to be willing to change the way we think and discover answers together. That means that we need young people in our ministry involved in leadership so they can help steer and direct the ways that we engage a culture that might be different than some of us older people understand. We need to, again, challenge what we think. Keep open communication. Individually and collectively, let's discuss strengths and weaknesses and growth areas and ways that we can improve, investing in a bigger picture than ourselves, understanding that this is not about us. It's about others. Those we train for ministry and those who minister, it's not about us. It's about current and future ministry of each individual and of our church. We must take the focus off of ourselves and place it on to others. Selfishness in ministry is destructive to ministry. See, we are a people God has placed in this church to carry out the purpose of His ministry here. And we are responsible for this ministry that God has called us to. I'm responsible and you're responsible. Are we, each of us, fulfilling our purpose in ministry? Are we training and investing and giving people opportunity? Are we taking advantage of opportunities and looking for places to serve?